Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Fellas, welcome back.
Donnie, happy Twos Week, boys. Happy Twos Week.
Happy Twos Week. What a great idea that was. Whose idea was that? Who can take credit? Was it a joint effort?
Yeah, I think it was joint.
That's a really
lost.
It was very much joint. Yeah, I think it was Razor and I talking about, remember how we used to do mega camps? 15 camps, 15 days, 15 towns. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to do that. Like, not that we didn't want to do it. It was a lot, right? To organize and moving parts, and you're outside, and sometimes we had rain, and you know, so
this is
we just felt that, hey, what if we, and then we called him. We called Dino from the road, because this was like back in when Razor and I went to Edmonton, because Dino was in the bunker there for a month, or whatever it was.
We had this in the works though for even a couple years ago. We talked about
putting
a week long. Yeah.
So well, to be fair, I did the mega camp in Lloyd, and I want to say Bain and Ritz worked it, and the response from the players was incredible. Seeing, especially the littler age groups, right? Watching these kids who are going to go off to college and lead in the program. It was awesome. So the idea was there, planted 3 years ago, probably.
Well, and I think the other thing too we looked at is we have a world-class facility here. Why would we not use it? You know, we don't have to worry about rain. Everything's centralized here. We have the classrooms, you know, so, you know, we've got mental performance classes. We've got strength and conditioning classes going on this week. Like, there's a lot of opportunity to do more stuff here than just, you know, just a skills camp. And not that we couldn't do skills camps in all these different communities, and maybe we look at doing it next summer as an offshoot of this. But yeah, the potential for this is huge, and the response has been great. I mean, lots of people around the facility yesterday and today, and continue on Wednesday, Thursday. It's gonna be awesome.
That is great. So
happy birthday.
Oh, hey, you cut me off.
This is a big birthday thing. Sorry, Donnie.
Well, I was going to ask you what else is going on, fellas, and then lead you into it, Dean, is how that works. Yeah. But you're just too eager. No, it's fine. No, you know what?
Dean's birthday today, but I'm really super excited about, because we got the Zoe cake coming too, right? So, but Dina won't hear this, so it's not a big deal.
No.
So, it won't be out of the
Do you have any idea what kind of cake you're getting from Zoe?
Well, the cake, no.
Yeah, I do. I guess I could share. I think it's a peanut butter cup kind of thing. Yeah, it looked amazing. So
that would be awesome. Yeah. You know, it'd be even better if it was like mint chocolate.
I think mint chocolate's a great combo.
I don't know. Anyhow,
you guys roasted me. Yeah,
it's gonna be a good week.
It will be. It is a good week so far. I mean, building hasn't come down, so that's a good thing. You know, the best part is we don't have to worry about rain or heat or any of that stuff. And obviously now we're no masks,
right?
Which is awesome. It's the first time in a year that we've been running around the facility with no mask on, so that's kind of good.
Okay, but can I just say, did you feel weird the first time you walked back in with no mask? Did it feel like you were maybe being...
Well, it's funny. I had lessons in the facility last week. And we walked in, and there was no sign-up sheet. And can't remember who was working. I don't think it was Ashley. One of the girls that were working had a mask on. So we walked in, and we didn't have them on. We were pulling in out of our pockets and looked around. All the signs were down. No mask, like the mask required signs were all taken down. All the footstep thingies and distancing stuff was still on. But
it's a step in the right direction. That's good news.
You got any updates from the weekend, fellas?
Well, I mean, before we get to our guest, by the way, let's talk about our guest a bit first, because we've had him on. He's what we would call a human Wikipedia page. So we put together some questions to try and stump this guy, and you'll have to listen.
Random, too.
Yeah, very
shotgun
random.
Shotgun stuff. Random. No. Just threw it out there, too. And then he went off on this spiel on, you know, the best part is it was named the kid's jersey number from the World Junior team. So he'd name the number, his hometown, his parents' names, his favorite dessert. Like, it was awesome. It was so good.
You mean that's about to come?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're letting people in on the magic of radio a little bit
this
here.
Is so
but
hard.
That's okay. No, this is
so
good.
So hard for my brain right now.
We're good.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's all good.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, bring him in then. Bring him in.
One more thing. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up something about the U19 liners that I do coach. We are in GPLS championship weekends this weekend.
I just got it.
Yeah.
Hello. Okay, we got to leave.
No, but that's good though.
That's good stuff.
I'll explain off air how cool that was.
Yeah. Okay, so this is, great. So we're in Calgary this weekend for championships. Can't wait. Fellas, let's bring him in.
Absolutely. Awesome. Let's do it.
Let's go. Peter Labardius, welcome.
Hey, guys. Awesome. Peter. Awesome to be back. I have so much fun. Don't really care if anybody gets it or understands it, to be honest. I just, when I see your faces, it makes me smile. It takes me to so many great memories and good things and things I'm excited about. So I come on all the time and hopefully somebody enjoys it along the way too.
Well, I sure do. Yeah. I can tell you that.
Yeah, for sure.
So just to let the listeners know, Dean and Tosh and I have prepared a few obscure, names, numbers, dates, stats from World Junior and hockey days, because Peter does have a wealth of knowledge. So we're going to get into some topics like the Olympics, maybe some free agency, the cup finals, baseball. And then we're randomly going to throw out a name, and Peter's going to give us the number, likely the city they played in, the medal they received, their place of birth. So
mom and dad's first name.
So it's interesting.
I'm feeling pressure today anyway.
I don't think you should feel pressure, because the thing is, if you're confident in your answer, I don't think anyone will know if it isn't right or not. So just keep going, just roll with it.
Yeah, I'm a little different that way. It drives me nuts when I can't. So you could fake it, but I don't like faking. I'm not a good faker.
Well, we
need to get better at that, actually.
We talked about trying to get a segment called Stump the Lou for the cast, and we're going to try our best today. And just judging from the pre-talk, I don't think we got it. So we'll figure it out, though. We're going to go.
All right.
Let's do this.
So where do you want to start?
Hold on, Donnie. Just a sec. Keep in mind, Peter, that with all the memories that Dean has had on this cast, if we actually did fact-checking, we wouldn't have time to do the cast. So
Keep it coming.
Oh, here we go.
Anyone have
my favorite part? Like, the best part is, and I mean this for all the listeners, because of some knowledge of these individuals, I just enjoy watching you guys go at one another. I could just sit here for the next hour, and I don't really need to offer up anything.
Yeah. I think I'm going to request, I think we should do it in the beer tent, because when I'm in front of him, like right beside him, I don't get that, but chirp, chirp, here it happens, because he's sitting in Saskatoon, right? If he's within an arm's reach, I don't usually hear that.
I'm not scared of you. You're old.
Let's bring back that popular segment of the over-under on Tosh maybe taking a shot at Dean. It was 2 minutes, 17 seconds. So that's pretty early in the cast to get one.
Okay. Yeah. I got the first question for Peter.
Oh, I love it.
And it's not this is going to be a tough one, I think. But, just speaking of guys that, were tough and intimidating and that kind of thing, let's go back to 1985-86 season, Saskatoon Blades.
Yeah.
There was a guy on this roster, and I'm not picking the top scorer. I'm not picking even the top penalty guy.
All right.
There was a fella on this team. His initials are JL, and he was the most scariest, most intimidating man I had ever seen. I was at camp, and this man he made me wet my pants.
JL.
This is going to be a tough one.
What year?
85, 86.
So I'm going to name a few other guys. So of course, Randy Smith was a big part of that team.
Left-handed
that year.
Centerman, number 9.
There we go.
Dad made a heck of a burger.
There you go. And I've got another one from this squad eventually here too, but I just, when I was going through these names, I'm like,
J-L.
This dude is a monster. He scared the living heck out of me.
See, I'm already like, I knew this was gonna happen today. See, if I had his number in reverse,
I don't know it. How about I'm pretty good at rhymes with. Or how are you?
Oh, I like
with?
That.
I'm not very good at much of anything, as the early part of this program is showing.
How about
you're 0-1, Lou? Nice work, you donkey.
It rhymes with Ames Lattos and starts with J.
Yeah, and he wore number 21.
James Lattos was
right. So see,
the scariest man on the planet.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay, yeah. I'm pretty sure he wore 21, and I'm not just doing this to make up. Pretty sure he's a right-handed shot.
I'm not. Let me see here.
Okay.
He is. Yeah.
Right winger. He's a right-handed shot. Pretty sure he wore number 21. But Dino, my mind did not go there because I never thought of him in that capacity when I think know. About that
it's,
era.
It's not a stat. It's not a stat. It's not a
right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, think about all the other guys that wore that uniform that year that should have scared Dean, and this guy is the one that came out on top. That's incredible.
Oh no, I know. There's a lot of really tough guys on that team.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this question.
Yeah.
What was it about him, and how did you arrive there?
Well, back in the day, he looked like a man. And right. I was like probably 16 or whatever going to camp for the first mm-hmm. time. He had these eyebrows that, his eyes were sunken deep in his head. He was a big, big, big man,
yeah.
An intimidating factor. And place of birth, Waka, Canada. Waka, Canada. There's a lot of tough guys coming to Waka. Yeah. So anyways, sorry to get you kind of off topic there.
No, I tried to recover the best I could.
Yeah, you did
your best. You did your best, 0-1.
You've got the roster in front of you. Who were the tough guys on that team then?
No, okay, so here's the next question then, part B. This is one I actually was going to ask, but as soon as I saw that name, I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay, this guy had the most goals and penalty minutes that year. Both.
85-86. Yeah, this segment is going nowhere fast.
This is great, Peter.
No, it's not good.
He's going to say the name because I think we talked about it yesterday.
Dean, has he been on our cast?
No.
Ooh, no. That would have been wrong then, too.
85-86. So 85-86 was the year.
I got a good story about this guy, too. Peter, you keep going on your thought process, and I'm going to tell a little story. I won't put any names in it, but it'll be a good story, and then you can, if it comes around, then you just take it from there. Okay, so we're in playoffs, and I got called up. I think Killer got called up too, so we weren't on the team, right? We were there for playoffs. We went to Medicine Hat, and we were practicing prior to the game, and this fella, he'd scored a lot of goals during the regular season, and we were working on the power play, and Marcel Como, who was our coach at the time, basically was telling this person, hey, you got to move around. You got to get yourself in an opening. You got to do this. And he said, Mars, I scored 60 from this spot and I ain't moving. And everybody just went, okay, you stay there.
I like that you said you weren't going to put any names in, but then you put all the names in. Except
no,
for the guy.
Como.
But you said
Como.
Killer.
The guy.
You,
yeah,
Killer.
Peter,
was there.
I went to a game that year and I saw him beat up a guy. Can't remember who they were playing. In the old downtown arena, remember how the boards were low at the bench?
Do I
remember? Your knees were above,
right? I can't remember anything else today, but I can remember that.
So he beat this guy up, and he didn't leave the bench. The guy was on the ice, and he was throwing bombs, and the whole Blade team just kind of moved down to one end, and he had basically half the bench to himself, and he's just pummeling this guy.
And I think he's on several occasions went over to other teams' benches, pulled guys off, and given them lips too. So
give him the initials.
LD.
Yeah, Larry DePalma.
There we go.
Look at Peter Lou coming through.
Yeah. All right, he's on.
And remember those terrible buckets.
Yeah.
That he wore. Were they? Were they Winwell or what? What were they? Like, Dino?
They looked like Tron. Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they looked like Tron.
No, I think they
were
Cooper XL sevens or something.
Jack Focus, who had a real big year, wore number 10, right-handed shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good crew.
Very nice.
Good crew. Good job, Pete. Okay, so now you're on the trail.
I got my first topic to distract Peter so we can start throwing questions at him again. But it's a relevant topic in Major League Baseball today, and we got a couple pitchers on here who may or may not have used substances on a ball to make it spin.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on what's going on in the majors with the substance check and how that's affecting the pitching side of the game.
Well, I would say right off the top that this is another scenario, and, you know, there's no set of sports like baseball or softball when you think about analytics. But, you know, this has all come to be, guys, as you know, because now we can measure everything, including spin rates. And because you can, you know, determine what a pitcher's spin rate is, then one and one makes two. Now, I've thought about this, and I've heard some other podcasts and other people's opinion. I think Major League Baseball has to find what I would call, it can't be a witch hunt all the time, but at the end of the day, determine what's okay and what isn't. So I heard the other day, and I agree, okay, listen, whether it was Phil Niekro or, you know, whoever, and, you know, talk about the sport, Jim Cowdery, I don't care who you want to talk about, okay? You're trying to get an edge. Mm-hmm. But if it's a rosin bag and, you know, you got suntan oil or whatever you got on you that gives you a chance to grip it a little better, I don't really have a huge problem with that. But if it's something that, you know, gives you a huge advantage and you know it's in vogue, then stop it. The other thing is to do this in the middle of the season, no. Because the one thing that, you know, and frankly, you know, I've loved softball all my life, but baseball's biggest problem, to be honest, is there's not enough action. And it takes too long, especially for the young people. We're not talking about old farts like me who could sit there for hours, but that's not the world we live in today. So now, if after every game and after every appearance, we're coming out and we're checking people, like,
yeah.
Anyway, you know, I've never believed in anything that for sure gives you an unfair advantage. But I think there's a bit of a limit too, and that's what makes the subject difficult, right, guys?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously, I'm not going to, you know, say that I didn't use stuff as well either. Everybody on the planet knows it, but I didn't invent it, right? And during that time, there was guys using belt grease, you know, rosin mixed with mosquito spray.
Right.
That was a nice little, you know, thing that there's different types of gum mixed with whatever else. Like, there's all sorts of stuff guys use. But what kind of helped our game, the softball side, was the Gorilla Grip. You know, it I'm almost thinking back in the, like, you know, if they had Gorilla Grip, would you have had to use a whole bunch of all these other tools? So I mean, you know, on the baseball side, maybe take a lesson from softball, come up with an approved substance that they're happy with, that is whatever the pitchers that are using stuff are happy with, and the pitchers that aren't using stuff, they can either use it, they don't use
yeah.
it. You know what I mean? Like, give them an option, but
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see what comes of it all. But yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a witch hunt right now.
Well, like you both said, everyone has, since the dawn of the game, have tried to find something to get an edge. And I know we've talked about Kevin Eager in the past. He put in five pieces of juicy fruit every inning and yeah, licked his fingers. But another thing that we used to do, and I know you played with him too, Dino, was spinner. Kelly Spence would have tar on his strings, on his glove. And when they'd throw the ball around the horn, he'd just load his finger and put it on the ball for the pitcher. And the pitcher didn't have anything on his glove. So the ump would come out and say, oh, let's see your glove. Sure, have a look. Nothing there. So there's still, like, that's been going on for forever.
Dude, yeah. Go ahead, Tosh.
Well, it's just not, and I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I never had a loaded bat in my hand either.
Ooh, there we go. Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, it's a hitter's trying to get advantage too. So in the majors, there's bats that are corked, I'm sure, and there's, you know, in our game that was pool noodles and squash balls and liquid foam or the expanding insulation foam, whatever you could do to get an edge. you know, guys nowadays rolling bats. I mean, there's all sorts of things that you can do to gain advantage. I just made a quick note there, Pete, because I think you really hit it on the head as far as we always feel that softball's advantage over baseball is it's so much quicker. There's a lot more action happening. You know, you can play a game in an hour and a half and it can be one of the most exciting games going. There could be great plays, whatever, bombs, yada, yada, yo. Can you imagine if they had to check Dino in between every inning?
Oh, come on. They didn't have to check me because they could see it shining from my glove back in the day.
But you know, the other part about softball is, okay, so, you know, I'm in my mid-50s, and in the 70s and 80s, like, I appreciated it in terms of one of the greatest games I ever watched, 1980 Canadian Senior Men's Championship at Gordie Howe, 20-inning showdown between Robbie Ginter and Gene McWillie. But back in those days at the highest level, you know, you were looking at nothing but, you know, 1-0, 2-1 games. Well, because of the what they did with the bats and the athletes and everything now, you know, go to the last World Championship. You know, it's never been, in a sense, a more exciting game, and the athletes are still unbelievable. But softball, to me, entertainment wise has gotten better. In fact, and not just because I was with the Harmony Centers in the late 70s and early 80s, I probably at that point, just from a pure excitement standpoint, probably enjoyed the women's game more than the men's, because the ball was in play at the highest mm-hmm. of levels. But that has changed. And for baseball, you know, because everything boils down to money, I got to tell you, I love the sport. You know, I played it as a kid at a decent level growing up. I don't know how, because I had no skill whatsoever. I could just talk and be a pretty decent leader or something, decent hands. But, you know, this baseball where it's strikeout or home run, it does nothing for me. The ball isn't in play enough. People can't defend. We can't hit cutoff men. Like, I don't – and I think baseball's gotten to the point where they now understand this. Like, I don't – like, you know, what Vladimir Guerrero is doing this year, having one of the greatest seasons ever, you know, we haven't had a Triple Crown winner for a long time since Cabrera did it a number of years ago. But I love the ball in play. I, you know, like, so, and again, Dino, I mean, it's not that I don't appreciate either. No. When a guy goes out and, you know, I talked about my favorite, one of my all-time favorite softball games was a 20-inning, 2-1 game where Wayne Wallace drives a double off the left field wall to finally win it in the 20th. But, you know, I think baseball could take some of that. And softball, I think, got to be a better game because the ball was in play and you didn't watch the best of the best and think, well, who's going to get the first run today? And it's probably going to be enough.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, I got that's my first one. I'm going to lob it up for you. It's going to be pretty easy. Okay. 95, Eric Dauze.
24.
Oh, Peter. And where were
three
they?
Three goals for Eric Dauze. He had 8 in the tournament. 3 of them came in a huge win against the Russians in Red Deer. Alexander Korolyuk takes a 5-minute major, gets tossed. Canada goes wild on the power play. Believe the final score was 8-5. He had 3, and pretty sure he had 8 in the tournament, went on to play for the Chicago Blackhawks. Yes.
And he's back, very everyone. Nice. Peter Lou, smash that one out of the park. Nice. Okay, so one last point on that about baseball getting, and I won't say boring, but it is harder to watch. Another thing that drives me nuts is the shift. We don't see a lot of that in softball, but you got left-handed hitters. You have the shortstop playing behind the bag, and the second baseman's 20 feet in the grass, and they're just pounding balls into the shift all day. Dino, if you were coaching a team, Dino, Tosh, Peter, anybody, and you had a big left-handed hitter up and everyone moved over to that side of the field, what would you tell your hitter to do?
Lay a bunt down.
100%. Yeah. And that's a thing that doesn't happen in the sport
anymore.
But
they can't do it. That's the problem. Yeah. That's one of the things I don't like about where baseball is gone. You can't you know, and again, you know, it's not just baseball either. You know, fundamentally, especially in that sport, because you get paid to hit home runs, I appreciate, I love good defense in the sport of ball. I don't care which it is. I love it. Like, I can watch teams, good teams, take infield all day, infield, outfield all day long. That's how goofy I am. You go back to 2002, the World Women's Championship in Saskatoon. I could watch Japan take infield, outfield from morning till night. I didn't even have to watch them play. So I don't like that aspect at all. And I don't like the fact that fundamentally guys can't, like, they can't do it. Mm-hmm. They can't do it. They can't drop down a bunch.
Piscio does it every once in a while, which I don't mind seeing him do. You know what I mean? But
his dad was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
No, it's lost in our game too. You know, we've talked to our Canada Games coaches, and one of the coaches brought up bunting. And I mean, in the men's game, you know, it's pretty much disappeared.
Yeah.
When we try it, you know, obviously the shorter game works well in the female game still, but yeah, it's a lost art for sure. You know, and I think it maybe some of the baseball mentalities come into that where they don't want to give an out away. They don't want to sack bunt anymore. They don't want to do that stuff because they're giving an out away. You know, I don't know.
They win more games 7-6 or 10-9 or 10-8. Right. So yeah, what's one more run?
Yeah. But, you're not trying to score one. You're trying to score five.
Right. But the interesting thing is that I don't think has really ever changed. And, you know, I can use hockey and what's going on even right now with the Montreal Canadiens, okay, who, despite when we do this, being down a couple of games in the series to Tampa, what has been lost in a lot of sports, in my opinion, is your ability to defend elite-level people. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk, like, baseball, everybody focuses on the big numbers and OPS and whatever. Well, whether it's baseball or softball, here's what I'm going to tell you. Can you execute the little things when games are on the line? That's the difference. Am I wrong? Between winning and losing. It's like, I get so frustrated, not frustrated, but it bugs me because I don't think people sometimes have enough appreciation. You know, I'm the opposite. I probably don't appreciate what people do in regular seasons sometimes as much as I should because it has value. But I don't care if it's been softball, baseball, basketball. I don't care, and I love them all. What you get done when it matters, like we're having fun today with memory and old stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I'd never call myself like necessarily a trivia buff necessarily. But if you've done something in a big game that matters, i.e. Eric Dazé, that's the stuff that translates. Like, that's where my wheelhouse really is. If you delivered a big hit or, you know, I go back to the 2015, you know, Pan Am Games final in Ajax, Ontario, you know, which I was lucky enough to be at. And, you know, Ian Fairman gets hurt at shortstop and Kevin Schellenberg comes in and barely played. Starts an unbelievable double play late in the game. Canada wins 2-0. And the fact that Schellenberg might have, you know, wore number 6, now I'm just showing off and being the dunk. and Fairman might, guy, that guy from Newfoundland, his first name starts with a B and his last name starts with an E, and there's a Z after it. That guy's pretty good clutch hitter too.
Yeah. Blair or Brad or both.
Both, but Brad for me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brad for me, like that guy's and it's funny, even at home, because I get the tweets or whatever, or what's going on out there in their league.
Yeah.
Does that guy ever not get a hit in a game?
No.
I think I've seen him play one game, and again, I don't get to see all that much, and for like I can't be in 1,000 places, but that guy has a chance to drive in a run or get a hit in a big situation. I'm betting on that guy.
Yeah.
Well, that guy's in scoring position every time he's at the plate because he's a tough guy to navigate around.
Oh, and it, like, And it doesn't matter what you need from him either.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Off of the exactly. Off the Canadian national team and on to somewhere else.
2009, Jordan Eberle.
The number?
Yeah.
14.
Yep. Well, we're randomly throwing him out there. I kind of went Oiler theme.
Well, so Dino scared me. Like Dino, like good for Dino. Like he made it. Hey, he made it really hard.
Not gonna warm you up.
Oh, okay. Okay. Did you guys catch that part?
Yeah.
Huh. Dino really scared me. He made it really hard. Donnie, we're lobbing up.
No, I love you. Yeah. I told you, Dino's Dino has scared me since he was 16 years old.
Yeah. So Peter, I liken it to
this. Come on, 27 on the blue line. Anyway.
Okay. I liken it to this. Okay. You had a rough start.
I did have a rough start. I admit it.
So as a coach in the third base box, I'm just trying to get your confidence back. So I'm giving you a hit and run. I'm telling you to swing the bat.
Yeah, do a good job.
That's what an old buddy of mine did back in Regina. I was head over heels for a girl that played me like the greatest fiddle you have ever seen. Girl named Lisa. I will leave out her last name. I was so infatuated, you dummy, at 22.
Yeah.
So, you know, I finally conceded that I wasn't going to win that battle. Might have had something to do with driving by her house and seeing, you know, the guy she really wanted to be with parked in front. So a guy, I'll share this with you because we can and it's fun. So yeah. I had a friend by the name of Rob Jamont at the time, and he looked at me one day. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Because he knew how depressed I was, and I'd shut down a little bit, and he goes, Lou, he goes, I call it the A-ball speech. He goes, here's what you got to do to get over Lisa. You got to, first of all, you got to get in the cage. You got to lay down some bunts. You know, you got to hit some singles. If it's on the outside part of the plate, you got to hit it the other way. Yeah,
hit a nice ground ball to
second
base. Hit
a nice ground ball, get a good feel. So you, Mac, you talking about that takes me right back to being 22, falling in love with somebody who played me like a fiddle. And yeah, I needed a little confidence back. So thank you.
And here's the kicker. I know Sharky.
I know. I'm not. Of course, you know Sharky. Yeah. He's a beauty.
Yeah, he is. Oh, that's
great up beauty.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Okay, I got one for you. Trivia question.
Yeah.
All-time leading scorer in combined in Canadian World Junior history.
All-time leading scorer. Lindros played in three.
You are correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Do you have an idea? And this is just for bonus points. Do you have an idea of the total?
17 as a 17-year-old and 91 in Saskatoon. I think the number is 31 or 32.
Yeah, it is 31, sir. The guy who says, I'm not a trivia buff. Well, but I'll just rattle off these combined numbers. Peter Liu, you are on fire, bud.
You know, that's the other reason, Pete, why I went hard at you on the first question, because we don't want people thinking these are lobs for you. Yeah. That was a hard question.
That was tough.
Yeah, I mean, especially the part B to that. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Jimmy Lattos is something like Dino, I'd have been thinking about that for, like, I would have just, it that's did right. not make the connection until you said the name. And then, like, that's the funny thing, you know? And the other part about that story was, so it would be hard probably to stump me on Western League trivia, especially from about 79 till I moved to Estevan in 1984. Then your career shifts. Like, it was funny. I was talking to my wife upstairs before I came down today, and I go, I always get nervous about these because, you know, there's some guys out there that are just, like, for trivia, it's like a guy named Liam McGuire out of Ottawa. Like, it's a show. Like, it's ridiculous. But for me, what it is generally is if I care about it and I've watched it, then it usually, like, that's the wheelhouse for me. But if it's just, you know, like that's why Larry DePalma didn't necessarily like ruminate right away. Now, if you'd have gone to some other years, like, you know, Wendell Clark,
Yeah, year two.
You know, who, you know, pretty good player, pretty good guy, comes from pretty good province. You know, I laugh sometimes because you think about crazy things. So the Blades are in a special playoff game in 19, and I was nuts. Like, there was nothing I wanted more as a kid than for the Saskatoon Blades to win the Western Hockey League title. Like, nothing. Obsessed. Like, beyond belief. And so they end up in a special playoff game against Calgary in 1984. Al LaRochelle was the goalie. At the end of the first period, the Blades are out shooting the Wranglers 20-5. And the Blades are up 5-4.
Wow.
Because poor Al, and what a lovely guy, I've met him, the whole thing, might have thrown this up to him and probably didn't start a relationship all that well. You could have mixed one in the first period. That would have been somewhat helpful. And then Wendell never made any mistakes, but he lost Scott Macon of the Wranglers with 6 seconds left in regulation, tied it at 7, and Daryl Daniel won it 7.5 minutes into overtime, and that, you know, sent me into a bad place. I don't know why I'm telling you guys this stupid story.
So, Pete, that's awesome, who do you think right now? I mean, because we're getting into the free agency stuff now. Who do you think, or maybe name the top or top three guys that are going to be sought after this season?
You know, Mac, it's an interesting class because, you know, whether it's Taylor Hall or, you know, a couple other guys, it's not what I would define as a great class. So for me, I'm not as interested this year. I'm always interested, but for free agency, there's guys at the top that usually get all the billing. But what I'm really interested in right now is, you know, yesterday, I shouldn't say that, sorry for dating, but recently the Kings just acquired Victor Arvidsson from Nashville. You know, probably the focal point for me in this offseason, and there's lots of them, obviously with the Flames and being involved with them, I'm fascinated with what they're going to do. Can they make a trade? Are they going to change the core? But Jack Eichel and Seth Jones are the two guys that I'm most intrigued. Like, I'm way more intrigued. And that, depending on when that gets done or if those get done, then I think that, you know, sends the ball in motion as to what's available. And, you know, Taylor Hall to me is probably one of the most interesting guys. But I think after what happened in Boston, and, you know, I've known Taylor pretty well for a long time. I called 2 Memorial Cups that he won in Windsor in 2009 and 2010. So have a pretty good feel for this guy. And I believe him when he says he's probably willing to take less to finally find a home and fit. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see how all of that goes. Because I don't love this class. I don't look at this. I'm more interested in guys who are going to move maybe than guys who are going to get signed. And the expansion draft.
Yeah. So if those guys move, then what you're saying is teams start to go to plan B and they start. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And the expansion draft.
On that, how do you think the Kraken are going to do coming out of the gate?
I think they're going to do just fine. Yeah. Now, it depends how people view it and look at it. I think we're going to have to wait a long time before somebody has a run like the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, those are once in a lifetime, basically type scenarios to come into the league, all that went hand in hand. And, you know, they make it to the championship final in year number one. But with how the rules are set up, the types of players they're going to begin with, I'm a big fan, guys, of, you know, Ron Francis. They have a really good staff. I mean, that's the thing even about Vegas. Between their scouting staff, both amateur and pro, and McCrimmon and McPhee, and, you know, it's you guys have been around sports your whole life. It's not an accident. When you have good people surrounded by good people making the right decisions, good things happen. So I think Seattle's going to be very, very competitive, but it, you know, if the marking point is Vegas, that's going to be unfair.
That's a tough bar.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, that's exactly, that's the word I was looking for. Do you know, that's a tough bar. Well, I mean, you can only go one more place than they went. So, and that's when the whole ball of wax.
Yeah.
So, but I do, I think in the Pacific, they're going to be a very, very competitive group because, you know, the other thing about pro sports today, and maybe sports in general, you guys could speak to this, is I think team has been lost. I really do. There's so much focus now on individuals. I think we've lost team. I think we've lost team, frankly, in our world a little bit with how the focus is, you know, social media, everybody weighing in, everybody's got the answers to everything. But I think even when I look back to Vegas, is when you take a bunch of guys and you immediately unite them because they come together and go, well, they didn't want me and you didn't want me and you didn't want me and you didn't want me. I think that was a big part of what built Vegas.
A little bit of a subject change, but you bring up a great point to my next topic. What's wrong with the Yankees?
What's wrong with the Yankees?
Well, they got the biggest payroll. They got all these superstars and they're terrible.
Because there you go. Like, the reason I love sports, and there are a trillion, is the value you get from being on a team and around other people and learning to connect even when you have diverse, you know, personalities. I don't think there's a greater teacher than being on a team. I just don't. Now, I think the focus has gone away from that. And one of the reasons the focus has gone away from that, and the Yankees are probably a pretty good indicator, and great question, Donnie, coming off, you know, the Vegas commentary, is guess what happens in those places? Well, one guy's making $50 million a year, or whatever he's making, and then you've got other guys who are making two or three, and I don't care any of us in this room, okay? And you know, people can sit back in their couches and go, oh, I can't believe you pay this guy this much money. Okay, I'm going to tell you in your chosen field, if you think you're doing great work beside a guy that's making 10 times more than you, it's going to cause a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, sure. And the other part is, I talk about team, good leadership in those situations is just so important because I don't think, and you guys have been on championship teams, do you ever win in sports? Here's my line, and I don't think I've shared it with you guys. I don't think in sports you win with the best players. I think in sports you win with the right best players. Mm-hmm. And your best people have to care more about winning and team success than they do about individual, whether it's money, their own stats. I'm a huge believer in that. I don't know if you guys are aren't.
For sure. Well, if you look at, okay, so look at the Yankees when they went through their huge runs, say, you know, back in the 90s, they had great leadership.
They did.
Right? They had Posada. They had Jeter. They had Bernie Williams. They had these guys that, you know, were glue guys, right?
Glue guys. You know. That's it.
Well, even look at guys like Jim Leyritz or guys like that weren't real stars, but you could tell they ran the show a little bit with all those egos. They did a good job of keeping guys in line.
For sure.
You got to care about one another. And in the world, I think that's where we need to get back to. Mm-hmm. We need more team. We need to care more about the people beside us as we do. But there's so much pressure. I see it. I mean, I'll ask you guys. You know, you deal with some elite young people of a certain age. There is a lot of pressure on young people because of, like, you guys growing up in your small towns and doing your thing, or me growing up in Saskatoon, I wasn't worried necessarily about living up to anybody else's standard or pressure. We enjoyed, like, I feel for kids of today, and it's not to be an old guy, because they have some great things that we didn't have, you know, either.
Yeah.
But we found fun in different ways. Like, we had to operate kind of as teammates, because I couldn't sit here and play video games, but like, I might have been the same too. We did not have an option. But right. kids are like, you know, I can only imagine the competition for scholarships, and it weighs heavily on kids now, because they, you know, like all of us, as humans, we always compare ourselves to other people. What I keep learning, and I don't learn it that well, truthfully, probably a different show, but the less we compare to others and be good with who we are, just makes us better.
Yeah.
So you know, like if I ever got a chance to talk to your girls or whatever in your program, like, and you guys, I know you're great people and you're good leaders and you have good value, and that's what I think. Team. We got to get back to more team.
So, speaking of small town, good segue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm from Hillmont, Saskatchewan, real small town. Yep. And this individual's from Hillmont, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, his name is Wade Redden, and he wore number 6. Played for the Brandon Wheat Kings.
Oh, gosh.
Scored one of my favorite goals in World Junior history. Let's go back to the 95 tournament in Red Deer. Wasn't even the winning goal. But again, when you're 17 and you make the World Junior team, pretty special. I'm going to list it one day, because I just love that event so much. It's only going to be my only regret of my whole career. And I was really close. I did exhibition games. I've covered a ton of World Juniors. I've been at a ton of them. Never got to call a game at the World Junior. Sorry. Get so excited I lose my headphones. One of the great games I ever saw was at the Saddle Dome, late December 1994. We're playing the Czechs. Back then, it's all round robin. Like, people forget that, right? There wasn't a playoff in the World Junior until it switched in 1996 in Boston. But before that, it was a straight up round robin to determine the champion. So each and every game was important. Canada trails the Czech Republic twice by 2 goals. Wade Redden, about 5.5 minutes left, walks to the middle of the ice, beats the goalie, ties the game at 5. 2.5 minutes left, Jamie Rivers walks out of the corner, gets to the front of the net. He scores, and then Jamie Storr, who was Canada's goalie, and I'll only bring this up because I'm an idiot. It's late in the game. Their net is empty. Remember the most famous shootout goal we've ever seen is Marek Milik in round 15 for the Rangers between his legs.
Puts a stick up in the air.
Puts a stick up. Dino, beautiful. Yeah. Marek Milik got robbed from the top of the left circle by Jamie Storr with just under a minute left in that game. To preserve the win, Canada gets an empty netter. Jeff Friesen, 7-5, all she wrote. How I got there from Wade Redden,
that's
you'll
amazing.
Never know. But,
okay. Yeah. So right now, you guys, you're talking, you're that's Roger Federer down there. All right, Pete, you're Roger Federer. What you guys are doing, you're not even using a tennis racket right now. You're throwing tennis balls over there at him, and he's just pelting them back at you.
Well, I didn't even get the question out. So, yeah, Peter, I'd say you're back, bud. You're rolling now.
We're
getting into it now, and I mean, obviously the sport that we're in, the sport we love, we're getting down to the big show here in a couple of weeks. What's your take? How do you think it's going to go for our girls?
Well, I think they've done great work. I can't give them more credit. The program you guys have been involved has come a long way. I think this is arguably as good a Canadian team as we've maybe ever had. I think the difference between this Canadian team for me and others in the past, I probably have to go back to the early 80s, and I'm biased about a lot of the ladies in that group, but I don't ever remember a Canadian team that had a better hitting lineup from 1 through 9. Now, it's not perfect. It's not the Americans. Nobody brings that to the table. But I think winning a medal, which that they've never done, I can't help but think it's still the United States and Japan at the top. But I don't see a lot of separation between Canada, Mexico, and Australia. I don't want to undersell Italy. They did a great job to get there. But I think Mark and his staff have done an unbelievable job. The challenge of not playing for a whole year. Said it on the show before. I got to know some of these ladies when I was lucky enough to call the Olympic qualifier in Surrey a couple of summers ago. They're terrific people. They've given up part of their lives, their jobs. I will cry if they win a medal. I have no trouble telling you that. I'll be incredibly invested. And I'll also say this on the show. I'm disappointed I don't get a chance to call this event. Mm-hmm. I really, really was hoping. Didn't work out. They'll do a great job. But for me, at my age, what I've done to have a chance to call Olympic women's softball at the Olympic Games for me would have been incredible. But I'm going to be up every night. I don't care what time it is because that's who I am anyway. It's nothing I love more than international sport and my country playing. But I think I'd put it this way. I think it's going to be the greatest women's softball tournament in the history of the game.
Yeah.
I really do.
One thing to point out too is I think the Canadian Olympic team, all the Olympic teams, the AU college softball, I don't think softball's been on this grand of a stage maybe ever. No. And they're really doing a good job of bringing it to the forefront and talking about what a great game it is to watch and view. And I know they're making a big charge to bring it back into the Olympics and keep it there. And I hope the ratings show that because it's been fantastic to talk to Mark and the girls and see what they're doing and follow them kind of on their travels.
Yeah.
Agreed. I don't care if it's 3 a.m. I'll be up watching that for sure.
Yeah. They're just, it's easy to talk about today, but being involved with elite level women as I was growing up, I didn't really know. I've loved sports since I was 2 or 3 years old, but to be around those women, and it was a different time, but I think it's people don't appreciate, you guys do, you're embroiled in it now every day. But for people who aren't going to make millions of dollars, who are incredibly gifted athletes, who give everything that they have, okay, we watch a lot of sports on TV where they say it's about, should be about the front, not the name on the back. Those women, and it might change. And you know what? I hope it changes in some ways because they're incredible athletes. But what I learned about those women back in the 80s, and I don't think it's changed. I mean, people have changed. But the top female athletes, hockey and softball, that I've been around are just some of the most dedicated, caring, all-in people in sports I've ever been around.
Yeah.
So this matters to these people. I think it's different. I think it's a little different. And I'm so happy that I got introduced to high-level women's sports when I did. And I hope it takes off. Look at the numbers at the Women's College World Series. I've been lucky enough. I haven't been for a long time. I went to two of them in 87 and 89 in Omaha, Nebraska. Going to go back. I can't wait to get to that great park in Oklahoma City at some point. It's on my bucket list. It's an amazing game played by amazing people. It really is.
Do you guys not think, the fact that the world is getting better, I think we have more and more of a chance to see softball in that role. Getting more and more because you see South American teams getting a lot better.
Yeah.
Europe, mm-hmm. Those are the places that are typically when they have an Olympics, softball isn't in it. Right.
Right.
So hopefully if those countries start getting a little bit better, which they are, maybe we'll see that.
What? Here's a quick one. Why is, and I get it. And listen, I mean, who could not be excited about breakdancing in Paris in 2024? No softball or baseball, but anyway, I shouldn't do that, but I'm gonna, and I don't care anymore anyway, so be mad at me if you want.
I don't think anyone here is mad at you for that.
But like, I don't even get why men's softball has never had a chance.
Well, I think with the baseball being in there, that's probably right? So I mean, would that not have been awesome?
Well, but I mean, listen, you guys forgot more about it than I do, but you know, the Czech Republic just won the European Championship on the men's side. You know, there's been unbelievable, listen, you know, what Argentina has done. You know, Japan. I could probably make an argument that there's as many good countries, if not more, worldwide that cover different continents almost on the men's side as there are on the women's side.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree.
Anyway, I love the game. I love the game so much, and I want more people to understand and appreciate it.
Peter, you bring up a good point. Breakdancing. What's most upsetting to me is that wasn't an Olympic sport when I was coming up, because my moves are unbelievable, bud. Like, that was my calling.
No. Oh. Johnny, no, it doesn't surprise me for a second. I can't dance. I can't sing, and I'm too fat to fly. So I never had a chance.
Hey, so Peter, just along those lines, because it is going to make a difference, and it's going to bring, like you say, these athletes that are dedicated, a lot of them now are going to be a higher profile with the new NCAA rulings, where now these athletes can make money off their name, their image. You know, what do you think of that?
I think it's necessary. I've thought for a lot of years that, you know, when you talk about billion-dollar television contracts that people are reaping the benefits from, I've always felt that, you know, something that the reins, I guess, Mac, needed to be loosened. Mm-hmm. But it does scare me a little
bit. Yeah, that's the word I was going to say, Peter, for sure.
Guys, it does scare me because, you know, anytime you open that box, where it goes, where it stops, and again, what really gets in the way? Money. Yeah. And what people will do in order to win, and rules that they'll break. And, you know, so I've always thought for years that it was broken. I just don't know how to fix it, because yes, I'm happy that there's more coming the athletes' ways, and they should benefit for sure. I mean, but on the other hand, what happens in college sports at the highest level with billion-dollar basketball and billion-dollar football contracts? And it's opening. Yeah. Scary. Like you guys said,
I just think social media, right? Like what kind of change is that going to have on you? Like, you know, I mean, you're talking about team and that kind of stuff first. All of a sudden now it's going to be, how do I promote myself? How do I, and that's what people are doing now. That's what basically TikTok's all about, isn't it?
That's what it's all about. Yeah, listen, both good and bad, and even myself, we almost have, you know, I might end up losing my job based on, I'm not a big social media fan. I'm just not. I like the information, but I'm sorry. Anytime you're putting stuff out about yourself, you're looking to benefit. Like, and that doesn't make you a bad person, but because numbers translate, all of a sudden bosses can look and go, well, this guy's got 18,000 followers. This guy's got 40,000. He must be more valuable. Well, okay. And there's some merit to that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, when you get older, have I played that game probably the way I should? No. But Dino, you're right. I mean, one of the reasons I haven't is I want less me and more team.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why we keep having you on here, Peter. We're trying to boost your numbers, bud. We're trying to do okay. what we can do to help you out.
Okay.
You know, yeah, nothing more. But you guys hit a good point. It does become more about the individual. And we've talked about it pre-show. We've talked about different athletes that we know that are all about them. And the concept of team is gone. And, you know, I won't go back into it, but that is why Vegas has been so successful. And maybe the Oilers haven't been, right? And it's not that Connor McDavid is promoting himself. It's just it's so focused on the one person. You know, it's tough. Like, you know, and I'm not in that dressing room by any means, so I don't know what's going on there. But you look at Vegas, you look at Montreal right now, right? The run that they're on. You know, that
doesn't happen without something special in there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, it helps that their goalie might be the best in the world right now, but
it doesn't hurt. Might have something to do with, you know, it's funny and it's easy to say this in hindsight, right? But I have a couple of friends that are huge Montreal Canadian fans.
Yeah.
And when PK Subban got traded for Shea Weber, I think. And I have a lot of respect for my buddy too, but he was like, there's no way this trade's going to work for Montreal. Like, we should never let this guy go and hang on to this guy. And I'm like, Dave, let's just see how this thing plays out. Because mm-hmm. A, I might have a little information that you don't have.
Yeah.
And B, Shea Weber, when push comes to shove, in best on best situations, whether it was the Memorial Cup in 2004 and what he's done at the Olympic Games, and you think, and Dino, you'd be the first to talk about this on defense in the National Hockey League. Those elite forwards, they're still not interested in going into Shea or Ben Chiarot's neighborhood.
No.
Yeah.
And the work of the Montreal top four, I don't want to take anything away from Carey, who, yes, if I have one game to play and I need to win it, as much as I hear every year, oh, look at his goals against and he's at a bad. Really? Really? Again, what do people do when it matters the most and it's the most difficult?
Yeah.
Those are my kind of guys, you know, yeah. And can you defend elite level people? The Montreal yeah. Canadiens have done an excellent job of defending elite level people
all year. Look yeah, what they I did mean, to Edmonton.
It's crazy. Down the stretch, they did everything, and I watched a lot of it with my own two eyes. They did everything in their power to try and give away that fourth and final playoff spot in the North.
Yeah.
But you could see that if they could ever get to that. And they did it really in their first 10 games of the year too. But that's the beauty about sports. You just, you don't know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of goalies, I have one more trivia question for you.
Okay.
Nice.
Goalies in 92, who were they?
Goalies in 92 in Füssen, Germany, when we finished sixth. And I was mad for a month. Trevor Kidd.
Number one. Real Trevor big bonus Kidd. Points for this one because I don't think he even played, but.
Trevor Kidd was number one because he was playing in his second straight.
Here's your hint. If you were in high school and you're walking down the hallway and you needed a drink, you would go to the.
Mike Fountain.
There it is, right there.
Wow, very nice.
Very good, Peter.
Very good, Peter.
That's a good clue, though.
Mm. Yeah, that's not bad. Eh? Donnie's been up nights thinking about
I've
that
been really one. Good at yeah, the game good. Catchphrase. Anyone wants me to play on their team as a ringer, real good at yeah. catchphrase.
Donnie, fantastic. You would be. Yeah. That's a great yeah. game.
That's yeah. awesome.
Great game. Like, we got to bring that on the road.
Agreed,
that yeah. might be, talking Mind. About the World Juniors, that might be the biggest disappointment that I can remember. Like, that team was stacked, including Lindros, you know. And the funny thing is that people sometimes forget. So he really stages his coming out party at the 91 tournament in Saskatoon, goes off for 17 points. But he played in the 91 Canada Cup.
Yeah.
As an 18-year-old. And yeah. and more than a, like, he was better in the Canada Cup than he was in the 92 World Junior, and also played in the 92 Olympics for Canada, helping get them to the final where we lost to the CIS 3-1 in the gold medal game, and scored a massive shootout goal in a quarterfinal against the Germans that almost ended my life.
So, Peter, you talked about the most disappointing result. You've talked about on the cast before the 05, 2005 team being arguably one of the best teams maybe in the history. Just for fun, can you rattle off a few players off the top of your head on that team?
2005?
Yep.
Yeah, Bell, Savrette, Glass, Rajan, Beauchemin, Brent Seabrook, Dion Phaneuf, Shea Weber, Corey Perry. Trying to think of,
I like that you went from bottom to top.
I wanted to give it to you sequentially. Okay.
Blue eyes first, Peter. Blue eyes, and then get into the brown and green.
Okay, yeah. So top line: Perry, Bergeron, Crosby. We had Getzlaff. We had Anthony Stewart. We had Mike Richards. We had Nigel Dawes. We had Clark MacArthur. We had number 11. We had Colin Fraser. Talked about Savrette, Bell, Seabrook, Cam Barker, even though he got hurt early in the tournament, couldn't finish it. Who on earth would I be? I've gone through pretty much the whole group. Steven Dixon is a guy that people don't remember very often. He was on that team.
Andrew Ladd is the only guy you really kind of...
missed. Andrew Ladd.
I said, can you name a few? And you went through training staff and all the players. So I would argue you nailed that question too, Pete. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
The most interesting thing about, if I can, and I got to go pretty soon. I hate to do it to you, but my wife's going to divorce me if I don't, because she needs the space. So the greatest hockey practice I ever watched in my life. And I've seen a few good hockey practices. So in that run, so the team gets picked, they close out their camp in Winnipeg. They have a practice a couple days later in lovely Gimli, Manitoba. And it was minus 107 without wind chill.
Oh boy.
But imagine this. Okay. So, you know, that group featured, you know, a collection of guys that have, I think, made up Canada's maybe one of the greatest eras we've ever had. When you think about Bergeron and Crosby and Carter and Getzlaff and Weber and, you know, go on down the line. That was an unbelievable group. So Brent Sutter, who is the head coach, they practiced in Gimli and it was 45 minutes. And imagine that group of people competing against one another in nothing but 45 minutes of battle drills. Two-on-twos, one-on-ones. Like, I thought Crosby and Phaneuf were going to – I was worried that we were going to have either one of them by the time the practice was over. To this day, it's the greatest hockey practice I've ever seen in my life. And that's when I knew for absolute sure – there was no way you're beating that group. That was better than any game I saw in that tournament.
Wow.
Better than any game.
Well, Peter, obviously you exceeded expectations on the trivia. A wealth of knowledge. We'll have to do a little bit more homework to get you on again for sure. But we're going to get into our shots here.
Okay.
I'm going to start with Tosh.
Oh, geez. I don't really have any shots. Gimli, Manitoba, Dino. That's where Crown Royal's made, just so you know. I know that you're a fan.
I'm sure Dean knows.
That particular drink. Yeah.
I've been on a tour through that plant 7 times.
There you go. Very nice. No, I
just kidding.
Yeah. I don't really have any shots because I don't take any shots at Pete. And I think I've taken probably enough on the, you know, you set me up with the pine tar stuff with Dino, but I've probably beaten that to death. So I'm not going to take any shots there. No, Pete, I want to thank you for coming on. It's such a blast when you come on because I mean, I'm sitting here just listening to you and all of it. I forget that we're actually supposed to be on this thing with you. I'm just listening to your stories and stuff. And it's, I mean, you do such a great job and We really appreciate your passion, obviously, because, you know, I don't think there's enough of it out there. So thank you again for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Guys, it's there'd be no way to tell you, and I'm sorry I get off on all these tangents and go in about 900 different places, but the reason I do is I feel so comfortable when I come on this cast that it just, I forget, and then I get off and I go, those guys must get off the air and go, like, could the guy just answer the question that we asked him once instead of telling 73 different stories and bringing back this and bringing back that.
This is what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about.
Love it. And I'm going to give just one parting shot, because I don't know if we've said it in the show or we did it off the air. At some point, we're going to have a different podcast that I'm going to participate on. And don't miss it, because I'm going to host the three of them.
That is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to be ready.
Oh, no.
I'm going to be ready.
Now he's got us a little nervous.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Thanks, guys. Hey, be safe. Have an awesome summer. Thanks so much for having me. It always just makes my day. So be well.
Awesome.
Take care.
Awesome. Hey, awesome.
Thank you, Peter.
What? Hey, if you don't know the show, we're not quite done yet. This guy hasn't given his podcast yet. I don't know where you're going.
Good point. See, I told you why I'm scared of the guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the average male, Peter, this shot is going to be I still like an answer from you if you can figure it out. But this is a shot as well. So you'll kind of figure it out. The average male takes 21.75 paces from home plate to home plate.
Oh, Jesus.
Who holds the record for most steps taken in an ISC career?
Oh, I know the answer to that.
Fucking asshole.
I could probably guess, but I'm going to let you deliver the answer.
I'll give you a hint.
Is he on this show?
He might be, and it's not one of the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz.
No.
Or the Oompa Loompas from Willy Wonka. No.
Did he ever wear 51?
He might have. He might have. Okay. Yeah.
All right. What a jerk.
That's fantastic. All right. That's all me. Right. I'm done.
Yeah. I'm
Donnie,
not going to.
You got one?
No. I mean, Peter, you make a good. You self-deprecate a bit saying, why does this guy always do that? We keep asking you to come back because we love having you on. And we got to find ways to get you more involved, because every time I leave a cast with you, I feel re-energized about the sport, about just life in general. You're a very positive influence on all of us, so we got to get you out more.
Yeah,
anytime, guys. I'm not kidding you when I say that. I do quite a few of these, but I don't know. I love this one because it makes me feel like I'm at home. It does. Like, there's just, I can't put it any better. I feel comfortable and I feel at home, and like I can say whatever I want to say, and it's a great feeling. It really is.
Pete, you are at home, bud. You're in your basement, but
ladies and gentlemen, in the bottom corner of my screen, none other than Wolf Blitzer, straight from the Situation Room.
Say goodnight, Donnie.
Good night.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.